Filmmakers and photographers drinking coffee and talking shit.
Welcome to Filmmakers and Photographers Drinking Coffee and Talking Shit. In this podcast, you'll hear insights and stories from four guys and maybe an occasional guest who have all come to the craft of visual media from very different starting points. In this inaugural episode, we'll meet the filmmakers and photographers. We'll drink a little coffee and talk a little shit. Let's get started. Chris, tell us about your background and what you do today.
Well, it's good you're starting with me because I'm the oldest guy here at the table and I'm going to probably hog most of the time. So, hey, thanks for having us all on board. This is a wonderful group effort and I'm looking forward to getting to know you guys better and hanging out and talking some shit. My story is a little longer than probably anybody here just because I started out in a very technical area in engineering, always wanting to do filmmaking stuff, but couldn't figure out, I mean, how do people do this, you know, really? And so when I got out into Los Angeles in aerospace, I started going to UCLA Film School at night and just opened my eyes, blew me away, you know, of everything that was going on. Got through their program and then immediately quit my engineering job and took a job for zero pay in the film industry. And I would deliver wine, I would do all kinds of stuff, but slowly worked myself up to an associate producer status on wonderful films like Hide and Go Shriek, Frankenstein General Hospital. I mean, these are epic films, Corman-esque, you know, 1 million, maybe 1.5 million, something like that. And then I've even worked on even films that are maybe $5,000, no budget whatsoever. Buddies showing up and just, you know, playing and learning our craft. For the last 25 years, I've been the owner of Advanced Media Services, and we do video production, motion media, some web work, all kinds of stuff. So I feel like I've been in the trenches for about 25 years, learning the hard way, the right way, the only way, I think, in a lot of instances, and perfecting my craft and enjoying the ride.
Oops. Sean, how about you?
Well, we go directly from the oldest guy to the youngest guy in the crew.
I like it.
Yeah, that's good. My name is Sean Letty, and I am a Colorado transplant for like 12 years. I've been out here for 12 years. And I actually started as a graphic designer, but when it comes to filmmaking, I feel like I've been doing it like for a really long time. I mean, I think back to when I was probably 10 or 12 years old, and me and my little sister were hanging out at home on a snowy snow day home from school, and we would take my mom's VHS video camera and literally make videos with stories and things. I have a background in theater, so in high school and when I was younger, I spent a lot of time on stage. My mother is a drama director. She's been doing that for 25 years, so my whole life has always been, I've always been exposed to the lights and the glitz and the production element of things. So I think from an early age, I had a desire to like see something how I thought it should be, right? So, you know, there'd be some task or some story to tell, and I'd always wanna, I'd have a vision for it, right? So I found my way into graphic design. I took some online classes and did a lot of freelancing and just kind of built up my graphic design skills. I was working at a call center for a while as a call center agent, and then they posted as a graphic designer job for their marketing team, and that was like my first design job. And then through that, you know, there's photography that needs to be done, headshots for the, you know, executives and things, and they call upon you to get that done. And so, you know, I've always been bolting on skills on top of my graphic design to photography. Then they needed a logo, you know, to be animated. So I think, you know, it's just cool that now what I do as a video producer, as an in-house video producer, I get to combine a lot of those skills, right? I get to listen to voiceover artists, they're actors, right? And I get to pick my actor for the piece that I'm doing. I love music, I'm a musician as well, as you guys may know from the intro, right? So, I mean, I get to pick music for the films that I make, and I get to shoot and do an edit and stuff like that. So I love what I do now because I can combine all the things I've been bolting on throughout the years, and I have a lot of fun with it.
So. You ever have that feeling, you know, you're out on a great shoot and you're like going, God, I can't believe they're paying me to do this.
Yes, yes. And I especially, I mean, you know, we have a show coming up that we're about to travel to, the three of us, you know, Matt and Chris and myself. And it's crazy, you know, at those shows, we have a lot of those moments where it's a big production and you know, there's famous people there that you have on camera. And yeah, you have a cool job for cool people and in a cool industry. I mean, yeah, so I'm very lucky to be doing what I'm doing now.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool, man.
Nice. Randy.
Hi, my name is Randy Fitzenmeyer, and I have a little bit of a similar background that Chris has. I went to school for aviation mechanics for a while, so a little bit on the tech side, but that's because I got talked out of the arts field, but I realized that's not what I wanted to do, so I got back into the arts field, and I spent some time growing up between the Chicagoland area and out here in Colorado, and I've had my own business for approximately 25 years, similar amount of time as Chris, but he is older than I am.
Wiser.
Just want to make that clear.
Wiser.
Wiser.
Wise ass.
But I started on the commercial still photography side of things, doing a lot of product photography to people, action, adventure, really mixed it up. And then about 12 to 15 years ago, I started slowly getting into motion, and I do video production as well. And Chris was one of my mentors as far as motion goes, and then I had a few others that hopefully we'll get them on the show as well. And the rest is history.
History to yet be told, right? All right, well, I'll go over mine. In high school, I was really into journalism. I had a journalism teacher that, and I still to this day don't know why this happened. She heard of an opportunity. Some local elementary school wanted a video made for their fifth graders who are graduating. Simple thing. And for whatever reason, she pointed me in that direction. I had a camcorder. My mom and dad bought me a camcorder when I was like 11 or 12 years old. And I went and I made this thing, and I kind of really enjoyed it. And so I pivoted in high school. I stayed on the journalism track through high school, but when I was done with high school, I didn't go to journalism school. I ended up going to film school, which I think is interesting. I'm the only one here with a film degree, but yet we all make films. And I think that that's fantastic. Yeah. My boss, who is a VP of creative for our company, she has a background, her degree's in economics. And I actually, just to take a sidestep, I find the really cool people that I work with are often ones that don't have a background in what they're doing as a craft. Because I think that alternate or that different background kind of gives people a different perspective on the way that they do their work. You know, whereas I came up truly through the film program, I think I see things different than the way the three of you guys do and other people that we work with do. So as a side note, I think it's super cool. But so I went to film school. I went to Full Sail down in Orlando, Florida. It's a technical, it's a expensive technical school. I got to do a lot of hands-on stuff. I got to, you know, shoot film, I got to edit. I got to actually edit film on a flatbed film editing machine. So I got a really good experience there, a really good practical kind of hands-on experience.
So you know what bins, you know what a bin actually is.
Absolutely, what a bin is, what the cutting room floor looks like, all of that kind of stuff. I got to do it. I think it was a Kim flatbed.
Yeah, that's what it, yeah, right. They were the guys that made those. Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
So I got a really good foundation kind of in the more, more technical aspects. I mean, we did stuff in storytelling, script writing, kind of all of the focuses, but it was very much a technical school. I finished film school. I did a short stint in a call center as well. I did technical support for Apple.
It builds character,
It does build character.
Learned a lot.
Especially doing technical support for people who used Macintoshes in the late 90s.
Wow.
That was a special breed of people. did that for a very short time, and then I came out to Colorado, and I ended up actually working for Chris.
It all starts and ends with me.
So I started working with Chris and learned a ton of stuff. A lot of the fundamentals that I still use today are stuff that I learned from Chris. That's how I met Randy, 18, 19 years ago, a long time ago. I mean, we were both teenagers. But and then that brings me to kind of, you know, I was in video and film for a while working with Chris, and then ended up kind of more in a corporate role. I kind of stepped out of doing video and film stuff for a while. This was early 2000s, somewhere in there. And video really sucked back then. I mean, it was 640 by 480.
Right.
You had to spend a ton of money with a giant camera to get even a good 640 by 480 image. And it was a lot of work, and things just never really looked great.
Well, we didn't have much to compare it to, unless Hollywood films are shooting in film.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know. You don't have a lot to compare it to. Very industrial, and so for a number of reasons, I kind of stepped out of it. I've always been interested in everything I see, and got really turned on again with a project that Chris and I did. We went out to Columbus, Ohio, if I remember right, and we shot some film at a company called Lextant. Am I getting that right? What do they do? They're
a usability firm.
Yeah, usability, user experience,
customer experience, user experience. Yeah.
And it was just like my eyes were, you know, wide open. I'd never really heard much about that world, and just kind of the whole psychology of marketing and all that stuff got me really intrigued. And an opportunity came for me to join a very small marketing team where I could wear lots of hats, which is what I've always liked doing. And I took it. I spent some time there, kind of worked my way up, and then landed in my current role. I'm the creative director for Informa Engage, which is the marketing agency inside of the giant global company that a lot of people probably haven't heard of, Informa.
So Matt sold his soul to corporate America, but we still love him.
I did too, a couple times.
Well, you're young, yeah, you're just making your way.
I can make up for it.
I absolutely sold my soul to corporate America.
I think it's great, you did.
But you got benefits in a 401k, so you're probably a solo guy.
Money's the root of all evil.
You know, it was funny, because like, I remember that, you know, when I first met Randy, like, man, I was in awe. I mean, here was this, like, young, good-looking, high-end commercial photographer, like, out there on his own. He has this, like, wicked cool commercial space, and I just remember, like, shooting some HP box.
Yeah, and I started old school film. 4x5, view cameras, bellows.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about
sheet film, you know.
I was thinking about this morning, like, not to get too into gear and stuff, but what would you have been shooting on circa 2000? In your studio. I remember you had a medium format Leaf digital back.
About that time had a medium format Leaf digital back that would go in the back of a Hasselblad camera. Uh-huh. And it had a filter wheel on front that would have your three primary colors, red, green, and blue, and it would spin. It would take three shots, put it together. Those three colors make up all the colors of the rainbow, and there you have it. And it was incredibly expensive, like $30,000 just for the digital back, which it's a paperweight and you couldn't give it away on eBay now. But that was the foray into, you know, the digital world of doing product photography with some quality to it.
Is Leaf still around?
Yeah, but Phase One is pretty much taken over.
I
would say.
Yeah.
On the large, high megapixel. Now they're up to like 150 megapixels without getting super into
into megapixels and whatnot.
On a full frame sensor? That's it.
Oh, like a medium format.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Big ass sensor.
The big ones.
Fat sensors. Yeah, the bigger the better, right?
But yeah, but going back to my beginnings, my grandfather was a kind of a hobbyist, you know, photographer, and had a little dark room in the basement. And the first time I saw a print come to life in the developer tray, I was hooked.
Absolutely.
And that was like junior
high
school.
Like, it is like magic.
And it was like a magic show.
Right, yeah.
And that's what hooked me in.
And it's like sorcery, right? Or science. All the chemicals
alchemy.
And the timing. Alchemy, thank you.
Yeah,
exactly. That's cool.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Fun stuff.
That's interesting to hear. My grandfather, too, was a photographer. He was also a wheat farmer in Oklahoma. Lived out on a farm. and in his basement was a dark room.
Yeah, same thing. My grandfather came over on the boat from Germany when he was 14 years old. And
you're not German. Fitzmaier? No, I guess you are German.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, machinist to butcher to you name it. Yeah. Yeah. He had to be a jack of all trades back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. It's really cool. So speaking of like leaf backs, and that was cool shit back in the day. What's the cool shit we see today? The thing I'm going to point out is Chris here pointed out a video on YouTube the other day. This cool little film, I guess. It's called It's Not About the Nail. We'll put the description or the link to it down in the notes for this podcast. But I have no idea who the guy is that made it. I haven't done any research on it.
It's a genius.
But it's just a brilliant little short film that could have very well been shot with an iPhone. It probably wasn't. But it's cool.
It could have been,
that
yeah.
It's just solid, great acting, solid storytelling.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I think it's funnier than hell. But that's like kind of the coolest shit that I've seen in the last couple weeks.
And that shows that gear is just a very small part of it.
Yeah.
It's all about, it's just, gear is just another tool.
Yeah.
Whether it be cameras or lights or microphones.
This will take me back and date me, but when Photoshop came out, mm-hmm. and I mean, Matt, you might remember this too, they were saying that, marketing agencies are done. They're over with now. There will be no more agencies because the clients will be able to create their own artwork. They just go get Photoshop and they're done.
Yeah, no need for graphic designers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So.
And a lot of them try. You know what I mean?
We've seen there. We've been called in numerous times to save their ass.
But even worse for photographers, and now that's starting to roll over into videographers and filmmakers.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody owns a phone, an iPhone.
But it's that, you know, I think it's that storytelling craft that you know, you've got to have that passion and that knack for it, and that will.
And you have to have a vision too, right? I mean, I think a big part of it is, you know, being able to tell a good story, but also having a vision for the little things, right? It's the timing of somebody walking into a room. It's the the lighting, you know, at a certain part of the scene, right? It's
really then, close to my heart. Lighting.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, you know,
back in the day when I was, you know, shooting film and whatnot, and then there's the video crew, and I remember hearing people say that, you know, a lot of video people couldn't light their way out of the paper bag because they didn't know how to light things like still photographers, which I don't agree with that because there's all different levels of
filmmaking. Oh, no, you've saved my butt more than once. That HP shoot?
Yeah, but I would say, you know, lighting a still image that you're going to stare at forever is different than 24 or 30
frames
a second.
Well, that's why.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's the same concept from a design background, right? I almost feel like it's more challenging to be a designer and have your work critiqued by a client than somebody who's making a film or a video, because in the still or in the graphic design world, it doesn't move. It's staring you in the face, and you have time to pick apart everything.
It's got to tell the whole story
in one image or in one instance. Whereas with film, we can use many more tools to tell a story: sound and we can, you know.
We have time.
Editing, and we have time and vocals, and you know, exactly.
And that's when I started learning the process. I had a mentor that told me a still photographer will make a better shooter in making a film than the other way around because of what was learned. But then, so I was ahead in that aspect, but I was behind on other aspects of storytelling. You know, I could tell a story in one image, and then breaking that into 24 images a second, but writing, editing, stitching a story together, that's where I spent my time learning more so. So everybody, that just brings it full circle to everybody taking a different path nowadays into filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is your thought about having to have a degree?
That's a good question. I mean,
how
I don't.
How important do you think that is?
Yeah, I think these days, especially in this field, it's more about your work. If somebody's impressed with your work, and they go to your website and they feel inspired and they get excited and they're like, I think I want to work with these guys, right?
I guess that would be more for corporate America if you're going to get a job out of school or how much time you've been out of school and experience that you have.
In a way, we're lucky because, well, lucky and cursed, right? Because you have to be good, right? Yeah, and not everybody knows how to be good, right?
Yeah.
And how do you get your experience?
And what we do is so subjective. So what we think is, we're rocking and we think is so great, other people would look at it and go, well, I didn't much care
that's
for that.
That's going to be a topic for another podcast.
Yeah, another podcast. We'll save that.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think lucky in that aspect, Randy, that we don't need to have a degree if you have a portfolio of really strong work, because it does the same thing. It convinces the person evaluating, are you the right person for the job, that you know how to do what they need you to do.
Yeah.
I think that's what it all comes down to. The degree is just confidence towards that.
You know, it's interesting. I have 6 people on my team, and every time I go to hire someone, I have to not fight, but I get asked. They always want me to put in the job description or the job, rec, bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm always like, no, I don't have a bachelor's degree. If that's a requirement, then I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And we were asking around the other day, and I think there might be one person on my team that has a college degree. Hmm. It doesn't matter.
And that
doesn't
can keep somebody very talented from even applying.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely it does. Let's get back to cool as shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does anybody, what has anybody seen lately that's like cool shit?
I mean, we're doing this in 3D or 360 right now, not 3D, sorry.
regarding gear, films, photographs,
you name it. Anything, filmmaking, photography. Like I said, mine was that film. It's not about the nail film, just because it's just so simple and funny and well done. And the fact that it could have been shot on an iPhone, it could have been shot on a Red, it doesn't matter. It's just great storytelling.
Yeah.
Great cinematography, great editing. And I think that's cool shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say I go to Vimeo like a lot of filmmakers and look at the staff picks. That's always a good source of inspiration. They've got a recent one up there called Dolomite that I would recommend. It's very cool. It's it has the things that attract me: outdoors, kind of you in the mountain kind of storytelling, aerial, nice music, haunting kind of music, interesting music. And a really cool story that is documentary, kind of more documentary based, not a dramatic story, but just featuring this impressive range. I think they're in Europe somewhere or something like that. I don't really know, but it was it's cool film. I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah,
I saw something the other day that I think it's been circulating for quite a while, and I'm embarrassed I cannot remember the name of it, but it's about a guy that was going through, found out he had cancer, and he was going through cancer, and then also the process of his dog getting older and losing his dog. And
sounds like a
character. It was so powerful and just incredible storytelling, and done quite simply. And hopefully next podcast I will have the name and write it down.
We can
bring
it
up.
Put it in the notes. Yeah. Put it in the notes for the podcast. But what about you, Sean? You see any cool shit lately?
Yeah, I think I'm going to throw a bone at Chris here, because one of the cool things that I've seen recently was a piece that his team did at Advanced Media. And this is not in any way me like just plugging Chris on this podcast. We're not here to promote each other
bit,
or anything for the listeners, guys. But why do we do this work if we can't appreciate each other's craft,
right? Yeah.
And one of his guys sent me a cut of this new piece that they did for a wind tunnel company.
CPP Wind.
Yeah. And man, it was shot really well.
Yeah.
You guys used some new slider stuff, I understand. Is that right? The same slider stuff.
No, it's a motorized slider. So one like Matt, that would be a good topic for one of the cool gear shots.
Is the
slider, right? Stuff. Because we use that a lot.
Yeah, and when to use a slider, right? Like when's the right time to use it? I mean, this stuff was really grand, I wouldn't say architecture, but these wind tunnels are very impressive to look at.
Massively large wind tunnels.
Yeah, and they're made out of wood. And so they're beautiful in construction, kind of like an acoustic guitar or the inside of an acoustic guitar or something. And they captured it beautifully, and I really thought it was great. So
thank you.
It was cool shit.
Hey, you surround yourself around with talented people, and that's certainly what I've done. And I really didn't have much of a hand in that, other than just like going,
Yeah, they did
good job, guys.
Yeah, well, good work.
And then,
you know,
that's going to be a great one to talk about in the future as far as client relations. That'll be a good one. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. Good.
Wow. Okay, let's talk coffee, because it is, in fact, filmmakers and photographers drinking coffee and talking shit. We haven't had very much shit talking, though. Like,
what?
I thought Randy was going to bring the shit talk, Sean was going to bring the coffee talk, and Chris and I were just going to sit here and look pretty.
That's right.
Well, filmmakers, photographers.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Coffee.
What are you guys drinking today? Sean, kick us off. What are you drinking?
Yeah, I ordered first, so I'll kick it off. You know, I'm drinking an 8-ounce latte. That's 2 shots of espresso in an 8-ounce cup filled with cow's milk. And I do the 8-ounce just because I think 12 is a lot of dairy, a lot of milk. You can taste more of a double shot inside an 8-ounce than a 12. I like to taste the coffee. That's why I drink whatever.
Sounds like you know what you're talking about.
Well,
when it comes
a little
to coffee.
Bit. A little bit. Yeah.
You got a little background?
He dabbles.
I dabble, yeah. So,
and barista?
A while back, you know, and this is actually kind of embarrassing to admit that this is how I got into coffee. It's so dumb, but I'll regale you with the story here, guys. So, there's a movie called, The Green Hornet? Is that what it is? With Seth Rogen and the Asian guy?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Well, in that movie, his dad is, like, super rich. He's the empire of this newspaper, you know. And he tells him the story after his dad dies that, you know, your father once told me that nobody can ever make me a good cup of coffee. So he built this beautiful espresso machine, and after, in the movie, since this is filmmakers, so we'll talk about the movie. In the movie, after his dad dies, Seth Rogen wakes up. He had fired everybody in a rage after his father's death. And he wakes up the morning after his father's funeral to no coffee. And every morning he had this beautiful latte waiting for him his whole life because he's a rich kid. You know. Mm-hmm. So he's got this personal, beautiful latte, wake up to it every morning. Worst day of his life, the coffee's not there. So he storms out looking for this guy who makes his dad's coffee. And they said, well, you fired him. He finds him, and he makes the coffee for him. And in that scene, the way they shoot that sequence of him grinding the beans, roasting everything, you know, tamping it down, and then doing the final pour, I, like, fell in love with it. I was like, I wanted that coffee. Mm-hmm. So I started getting into it. I started with a cheap espresso machine and just finding my way and learning how to do it. And now I make lattes at home. I have an Instagram page, and it's just another way for me to be creative and enjoy deliciousness every day.
So cool. If this amazing coffee shop gets so busy and they actually kick us out, we can do this an episode of
yours. Yeah, we could definitely do that. We may have some surprise guests because I have a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old at home. But they could probably go over to Mimi's house if we ever really actually wanted to do that. We could make that happen.
Yeah, we might do that.
So coffee.
Yeah, and we're at Dark Heart.
Yep,
in Loveland, Colorado, USA.
Super cool place.
Yeah,
and a really good coffee.
I love this place. Good people that run it. Fantastic coffee. It is my favorite go-to coffee place. I've always kind of been into coffee. I'll drink anything coffee-wise. But it, you know, definitely Sean has opened up my eyes to, a very good cup of coffee and what makes the difference in it. And one of my my goals in retirement is to really geek out and get into coffee and take the time.
Well, what he just said about the 8-ounce versus the 12-ounce, and you can taste the coffee more, I had no idea.
Yeah.
So I would love to taste the coffee more than, because I got a 12-ounce. So I just learned something. And next time
you're switching it up.
Donate.
Absolutely.
Or so an extra shot.
Yeah. Or
so that's, you know, so I'm drinking an 8-ounce latte. I try to be vegan, and I try to stay away from dairy. And so I've got oat milk on mine from Oatly. And I just did an 8-ounce today because actually before we started recording this podcast, I had an Americano. And I had coffee before at the office. So I drink a lot of coffee.
More than I do, actually.
Yeah.
Really?
So I drink maybe one, sometimes two a day.
Yeah, and I'll go through a lot of coffee. Normally, though, if I hadn't had the Americano, I would have had a 12-ounce Oatly latte with an extra double shot. So 4 shots plus the milk. And of course, their coffee cake here is fantastic. But Randy, how's your cup there? What'd you have in that?
Outstanding. I had a large mocha, which would be a 12-ounce, correct?
Yeah.
Love my mochas. So not exactly the healthiest thing. If not, I just do straight up espresso. That's really my favorite. But not enough volume always. You know, if you want to keep drinking for a while,
and go straight for the espresso.
Right.
Yeah. I had to work that in because we hadn't had much shit talking. Right. So you cut through all the bullshit, cut out the milk, go straight for the espresso. I like it.
So mocha is basically a latte with some chocolate in it?
Yeah, and places make them differently. Some places make them with syrup. Some places make them with powders. Some people make them with chocolate milk.
How do they do it here?
I don't know, actually. That's a good question. Yeah. When I do a mocha at home, and actually what I get the request for at home is iced mochas. Okay. Oh. So what I'll do is I'll actually make chocolate milk in a glass, and then I'll fill another glass with ice, and I'll pour the espresso over the ice, and then dump the chocolate milk in, and then mix that together. And it gets a nice little, you know.
You pour the hot espresso over the ice, or do you chill it first?
Nope, I pour the hot espresso over the ice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. Chris, what are you drinking?
You guys, you forced a cup on me, because, I'm here for the kombucha, you know. We got great kombucha here.
I love kombucha, yeah.
Yeah, it's good for you, it's healthy.
Is it too late for us to change this to filmmakers and photographers drinking kombucha?
And talking shit.
I already made the logo.
Made the logo. Okay.
No, I'm having a honey salt latte, and it was delicious. And it's the large 12 ounce. And I'm just rocking in my boots here. Because I don't drink a lot of coffee.
Yeah. What happens to you, Chris, when you do drink a lot of coffee?
I get a super buzz. You know, think about when you're 12 years old and your dad gave you a cup of coffee. Uh-huh. That's me right now. totally buzzed.
Does that stimulate creativity, you think? Like, would you be able to go back to the office and, like, rampage through work? Or would you be, like, way too distracted and need to get out of
there? Nah, I think age mellows you. I'd get back and go, what are you guys doing? Cool. That looks so cool, man. Just keep it up. Keep going. Yeah. No.
Let's talk geeky tech shit. We've talked coffee, we've talked cool shit that we've seen. Let's talk geeky tech shit, specifically today, drones. So last week, DJI released a couple of new Mavic Pro drones, which is cool. One has a large Hasselblad sensor, a 1-inch sensor, and then they also had one with a zoom lens. What do you guys think about drones?
Not to step all over you, but I don't know this for a fact, but I'm guessing it was a Hasselblad camera lens, and it's probably a DJI sensor that was probably sourced from someone, would be my guess.
Oh, you think, okay.
Oh, okay.
Just because I don't know if Hasselblad's making their own sensors like
Did
that.
Did I say
the DJI,
Hasselblad's
yeah,
sensor?
Yeah, just to be.
Probably Hasselblad lens, right, DJI sensor. Yeah.
Anyway,
if you're listening to the podcast, comment below.
Yeah,
on what you think, on what you'd rather have.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Did they do it right? Did they do it wrong? Discuss.
I think they should get into cahoots with Phase 1 and have a nice 150 megapixel sensor with Hasselblad lenses on.
Well, I think you can do that. That would be the big ass DJI. I don't even know the names of them because that's not in my realm.
That's not in your pay grade.
I'm not good at drones. I've only flown a drone one time with Matt, and I didn't even land it. He didn't let me. That's okay, because he's even crashed the drone, so I don't want
to
be responsible for that.
But
I have a question in my lack of knowledge about drones. Do they have a drone that will carry a full-size digital camera?
Absolutely.
They do. Yeah.
The props could cut your head off, potentially, but
they carry propellers and big,
monsters. You don't know the Inspire series from DJI.
Is that six propellers?
No, it's I think it's four. Well, they have a six prop one, I'm pretty sure, too, but they got a four prop rig as well, and it carries a smaller DSLR. Mm-hmm. And please comment below if I'm totally bullshit.
The Inspire has a built-in camera with interchangeable lenses, but they also make another I forgot what it's called, the Mantis or
I think it is something like that, Mantis,
what it is. But that'll hold like a DSLR. But your large drones, and Chris, you know about them more than I do, you made them, that will hold like a full-size red cinema camera, instance. Those are incredibly expensive and incredibly dangerous.
And that's not like even prosumer. I mean, that's like maybe...
No, that's pro.
That's pro. Let me ask you this. So how integral do you think drones are to the filmmaking toolkit today? Like, if you are any sort of serious filmmaker, should you start looking at and investing in a drone?
No, you should just rent a real helicopter.
And film it like Randy does, hanging off the bottom bar of the helicopter.
I don't know, what do you think, Chris? You think every respectable filmmaker should have a drone?
No. But I think it's becoming a very important communication tool. I mean, just because you don't have to think about drones as like these high aerial or sweeping shots or all this kind of stuff. I mean, we'll use a drone on a shoot just as a jib. Mm-hmm. You know, so you could, we could have a jib, you know, 10, 20 foot jib that would just go up and down. We can get a riser up over, you know, if we're filming over shoulder or something like that, we want to see what's off in the distance.
Which brings up the point of everybody and their uncle Bob owns a drone nowadays. It's what you do with it.
Yes. Right?
Do you know how to do camera moves? Do you know how to do filmmaking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every tool should be used for a specific purpose and reason.
Mm-hmm.
On another topic.
And it's interesting, mm-hmm. you say, like, it, you know, it's becoming an important tool in communication because it is how you use it. The drones work really well on certain shoots, like, say, you know, Sabinza, where,
yes.
you know, in India, because to show the scale of those fields and to show the scale of the operation, it's hard to do that from the ground, you know? So it's
absolutely,
important
yeah.
to tell that part
so
of the story.
So agriculture, where you want to, you know, show yeah. the vast area, plus yeah. just the scenery in the background. We really wanted to illustrate, or you did, because you were the drone pilot for that mm-hmm. shoot, that we were in India.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so and definitely it was a critical part of the story. When you were flying, you're like going, Matt, you're getting all the cool shit. I'm down here on the ground. I'm shooting whatever I can
yeah,
capture.
That's cool shit. Yeah. We'll post a link to that one below. You guys can check that out.
Yeah, that was a fun
joint
fun,
effort
yeah.
between a few of us here.
Which also brings up the new FAA Part 107 licensing.
That's new.
Are you better off begging for forgiveness than asking permission? Or should you get your license?
I don't know what you're talking about.
That answers Matt. That's Matt's answer.
We're supposed to be talking to the other end of that.
I'm just a hobbyist, you know, so, you know, it's an important thing, and definitely if you're using this commercially, you're going to have to get that certification.
As you should, because there's a lot of people out there that
are... Is it expensive and hard to get?
No.
It's just time.
The exam is lengthy, and they really want you to know a tremendous amount of information.
Yeah.
So it's just dedication of time, putting some time in and stuff like that.
Well, we've never been shy about learning new things, have we?
Yeah. I wonder if I could bypass that with my FAA airframe and power plant license.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Yep, I'm an expert in this, and you don't need the thing.
but there's so many people that just don't think fly a drone and put people potentially at risk. So
yeah,
ultimately, it's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah. Even if you're not certified, you should become familiar with some of their rules. I mean, there's a liability issue involved. So, but
yeah, absolutely. So, Chris, you've got a Phantom 4 Pro.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
We've got the original Mavic Pro. You gonna get a new drone? There's your Phantom 4
oh, yeah.
Pro still.
No, it's still working well. Yeah, I mean, it's. I would love to have an Inspire. You know,
yeah.
and you know that's.
So that's where you would go. You would go.
Yeah.
Up.
Yeah.
Not to the smaller Mavic.
But then it all depends what job you're doing, because sometimes taking that extra size and weight and time to deploy might not work or be as profitable on a certain job as it would be. A small
yeah,
one, right?
Yeah, you know, it's like as filmmakers, we want to be equipped with the best tools we can possibly have, and you're just going to get a better image quality out of the Inspire.
Sure.
I mean, it's not like night and day. It's like, you know, it's like, would my clients know the difference? No.
Especially on the web.
But it would, you know, we want to start with the best quality raw material we can have. I mean, we're always striving for that, right? And it's just
absolutely.
By having a better camera system. You got a little bit better image. But you make a good point because size does matter. Guys.
And that's an episode on its own, I think, because I have actually I've learned a lot about the difference between big rigs and things that take a long time to set up and what you can do on a small
yeah.
mirrorless, you know, with a gimbal.
Yes.
You know, or a phone
exactly.
on a gimbal.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a whole
yeah.
episode.
Yeah, that is the whole, like, the right tool for the job kind of thing, but there's a lot of blurred lines and gray areas in there. So, listen, guys, let's wrap this up. It was fantastic kicking off this inaugural podcast with you all. For those of you who were brave enough to listen through this first thing, congratulations. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Share this with your friends and colleagues, and you can rightfully say, I've been listening to those guys since the very beginning. On the next episode, we're all going to imagine time travel. What we'd go back in time and tell our younger selves. So stay tuned.
Filmmakers and photographers drinking coffee. coffee and talk.